Thanks for joining us for a Saturday afternoon edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, where we are going into depth in the Nets 2018 draft class, telling you how two skinny Europeans are going to become NBA superstars or contributing role players on the Brooklyn Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team.
You're listening to the Locked On Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Gavin Shaw. After 4 years covering the Phoenix Suns, one night spent on Josh's couch watching the NBA draft, I am here to cover your Brooklyn Nets and give you the lowdown as we head into the 2018-19 offseason. And I am joined by the GOAT, Josh Bass. Josh,
you
excited about this draft? Yeah, GOAT season. How are you feeling just overall about this draft? Because I know, or at least like I think I was like a little bit disappointed initially when they took Musa more than you were, but you weren't super excited. Like 2 days later to sit on it and gather more information. How are you feeling?
I'm happy with Musa because I think he has talent. And obviously people don't like when international guys go get drafted by your team just because you haven't seen them play. It's not necessarily anything against them. It's just that you don't have that familiarity. I mean, it could be someone like Anfernee Simons. Have people watched him play? Really? No. Like, he just played in the AAU circuit in high school. So, like, I'm sure Portland fans are feeling the same way about him, and he's American. So, but from what I watch of Musa, he's a great scorer, idolizes Kobe Bryant. So, obviously, he's going to become the Bosnian Kobe. So, there's something to work with here.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I think I might have been a little bit xenophobic on our first podcast.
Yeah, you were pretty down on him.
Yeah, no, I just didn't like. I mean, everything I'd heard was like he's like just like I really do hate his build, and it's probably a little bit of self hatred coming out on the podcast. Yeah, tall, lanky, super skinny.
Posture.
Yeah, sure. But I'm not an NBA player, so that's the difference.
That's true.
So I don't know. To me, that was really concerning. Then you just heard like stuff about him, like not like nothing on him as a person, but just as like a player. He was like a little bit selfish, which after learning more about him, it seems like he's diversified his game a little bit, and he's turned himself into a better passer and more of a proactive ball mover, which is kind of exciting. And the fact that on top of idolizing Kobe Bryant, he also idolizes Manu Ginobili. So to me, that's a little bit encouraging. And again, reading up on him as a player, and we're going to get into it in the next 20 minutes or so, but it does seem like he really has a chance to be a very, very special scorer, and he's so skilled. My big thing with both these guys, and it's a bigger issue with Musa because he's 30 pounds lighter than Kurucs is I just don't see any guys in the NBA that look like these two. And you could argue that's advantageous given their guard-like skill set. Like they could kind of be freaks. Not in the Giannis sense, but in like a lighter sense in the NBA. But I don't know. I just don't see anyone that looks like these two in the league. So I guess that was my initial concern, and to some degree is still my concern.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think that with Musa, my big takeaway is that I like how aggressive he is, because obviously the stereotype of Europeans is they're soft, and obviously you have guys like Darko Milicic that are the poster boy for that kind of just lack of aggression. And players, I feel like there's a new trend in recent years where all these European players are coming in. It's like, oh, they are obsessed with the NBA. And that's like their big selling point, to know that they're not just doing it because they happen to be born with genetically freaky height and talent. Like, they actually want to be in the league. And I think that's good. And kind of what you're saying in terms of no one that looks like these guys, I would have to rack my brain to find someone of that mold, but I do think it's not necessarily a deal breaker. I think it's more of a deal breaker on defense, but if you can get a good player on offense at the 29th pick, it's worth a swing. And is he ever going to be a starter? Who knows? But I think Musa could at least be a good contributor off the bench, someone that's a microwave scorer. And when you're playing against bench guys, you don't need to be as good and as versatile of a defender just because you're going up against lesser talent.
But Josh, how would he have played in the 2018 finals? And I think that should be a concern as a rookie.
I know.
I was just kidding with you. I'm with you. And I guess that was also on top of my obvious xenophobic tendencies.
KD, doesn't he have the same build as KD? A little shorter.
Yeah, no, similar. And it's funny because like everyone, I mean, I think because of lack of length, I honestly think people talk about like strength as a big issue, and a lot of times it's I think strength is it's a deal breaker when you don't have length to compensate, and lack of length is a deal breaker when you don't have strength to compensate. So at least both these guys are really tall, and I'm not really sure about Kurix. I know Musa doesn't have particularly long arms for his height, but he is 6'9", and he is going to be mostly guarding smaller players, so I think that gives him a chance. And it's interesting, not to get too sidetracked here, but with someone like KD, who's turned himself into a great defender, you see all this like hand-waving about the lack of strength of certain prospects. I know Trae Young has kind of gotten bulldozed for it, and in all likelihood, he's probably not going to be a very good defender in the NBA, but he's someone who I think he ended up doing like 10 or 12 reps at 185 pounds on the bench press. KD couldn't do one when he was coming into the NBA, so I guess this is kind of a self knock on the head too, because I was obviously complaining about this just a few minutes ago, but there might be a little bit too much made of guys' lack of strength coming to the league, because obviously they've never been in an NBA strength and conditioning program, and that seems to make a dramatic difference for a lot of different guys. So Musa could look like a completely different person in a few years.
Yeah, I feel like strength was something that mattered a lot more 10 years ago when you had a lot of these power wings, whether it be Corey Maggette or Jerry Stackhouse, that really played out of the post and just bulldozed through you. And now guys are so much more finesse. There's a lot more space to work with. The post-up game has been de-emphasized, and obviously having a strong build is important, but it's not something that is as important to be a top defensive player. You're not going to be going up against LeBron every night.
Yeah, that's funny that you say that, because that's exactly the guy I was going to pull out. Like, when you think of, like, bully ball in the NBA, the guy I think of now, and it's ironic because he's someone who's obviously incredibly skilled as well, is LeBron James. And I flash back to the NBA Finals this year where they were constantly trying to get Curry switched onto him, or the round before where they were trying to constantly get Rozier switched onto him. And it's interesting because not to say that strength is irrelevant, but if it's someone like LeBron, it doesn't matter how strong the defender is. He's the freak to end all freaks. He's going to run over them anyways. So it's almost like the other factors matter a little bit more in terms of who you're going to go up against on a daily basis. And if you go against one of those freaks, it almost doesn't matter how strong you are, because you're going to be in trouble either way. All right, Josh, let's take an early break on this podcast, and then come back, and we'll dive deep on both Musa and Kurix. Thanks for joining us back on the Locked On Nets podcast. The time is here. We're going to do a deep dive on Janin Musa, 6'9", 195 pounds, out of Bosnia. Josh, the thing that I love about Musa, and you said it, is the recent trend of European guys coming over, and there are always questions about their love of their game, which I usually think is pretty unfair. Though, again, there are guys like Andrea Bargnani that give all these guys a bad name, which again, I think is kind of a ridiculous point, because you could just say, well, what about Anthony Bennett? Anyways, I love this quote from Musa, because it confirms to me that this will not be an issue. He said in his opening press conference, "As soon as I got a ball, I was like, I'm going to marry you one day. Now I'm here." That's all I needed to hear. That was great for me.
Started from the bottom, now he's in Brooklyn.
And married to a basketball. Drazen Petrovic, Nets legend, is the person he'd most like to meet. And I thought it's pretty interesting, because Musa, when he was younger, he actually played, I can't remember who was at a basketball academy or professionally in Croatia, but he got to know Petrovic's mom and some of his friends in life. And just karmically, I kind of like that, and I think it's a good sign for him. As far as getting into statistics, I really like what he did on kind of a, not a world stage, but a European stage, going up against other NBA players. He averaged 23 points on 53% shooting from the field and 45% from deep in the 2019 FIBA World Cup European pre-qualifiers. In Euro Cup play, he was at 11 points in 20 minutes. But again, you got to remember, I feel like Luka Doncic or Doncic is setting expectations almost astronomically high for the type of production European players need to have. You look at guys like Mario Hezonja, who were top six picks in the draft. They didn't have close to the track record that someone like Musa did, getting picked 29th. So I find that encouraging that he was even able to be a role player at the Euro Cup level. And it seems like every time he's in international play, he's been utterly dominant. You can even go back to 2016 when he was on Bosnia's under 17 team. He averaged 34 points a game. So he's proven it time and time again, going up against the best competition at his age level the world has to offer. And to me, that more than anything else is leading me to think I might have been off in my initial opinion of him.
Yeah, he's also, he just turned 19. He's one of the youngest players in this draft. So he's someone that's kind of a blank slate for Kenny Atkinson to work with. And someone of his skill level, I think that his kind of mentality, I think he wants to get better. It's more about rounding out his edges, becoming a complete offensive player, because he can shoot from three, both off the dribble and off the catch. He can get to the basket. He's good in transition. It's kind of just tightening up his handle, making sure he's a more well-rounded playmaker. And then obviously the defensive questions are probably going to last forever, just with a player of his athletic limitations. But I think for 29, this is a home run. I mean, it's, I don't know who else they could have taken that would have had his upside on offense.
Yeah, and I guess the name that is most logical for us to throw out there in that conversation is Elia Kobo, who I just sent you a report from Brian Lewis in the last day or so, saying the Nets, he was a guy the Nets had a lot of interest in, and Sean Marks flew out to watch him in person. And it seems like if Musa was off the board, maybe a Kobo could have been in that conversation. But I don't know. I guess, I mean, would you say purely based on need, if you think their upsides are similar, Musa might have been the better pick given how solidified the Nets seem at point guard?
I don't even know if I would go into positions and the scarcity there, but I think that Musa just has a really good track record playing well in the Adriatic League, obviously has succeeded in international competition. Okobo's a guy that's really risen up the boards the last couple of months. I think it was his 44-point game that really put him on the scene as a potential end of the first round guy, even though he ended up going 31 overall. I just think Musa has more of a track record, and he was projected to go anywhere from 16 to 23, so I don't even know if Sean Marks really had him on his radar as a realistic pick at 29. So I think that they probably loved Ellie, and I think me and you like him also. And happy for you that your Phoenix Suns got him.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that at 29, it's kind of a no-brainer to take Zanin over Ellie.
Yeah. All right. No, I definitely hear that argument. As far as comps for him, the guy I saw a few times, and the comparison I agree with, at least initially, is kind of a bigger Mario Hezonja, and I probably should have striven to have been a little bit more creative and gone with a non-European. But I just see a lot of similarities, like especially in terms of like how they were hyped as prospects, like these like super confident, ballsy scorers who, at least amongst their countrymen, were almost unstoppable at that level, but don't necessarily have the requisite athleticism to score with that type of dominance in the league. But I see a lot of similar qualities in that he's a really strong shooter on the move, has ridiculous range on his jumper, but at the same time, hasn't been consistently productive from 3-point range. This is the first year of his in European play where he shot better than 30% from 3-point range, and I think part of that is because it kind of reminds me of Alan Crabb a little bit. There are a lot of moving parts in his jumper, and the fact that he doesn't have that explosive athletic ability means to create room, he's shooting from 3, 4, 5 feet in back of the line. And he's such a talented shooter, he can do that on occasion. But I kind of get the impression this is the first year that he got to the point physically where he wasn't just worn down constantly while shooting, and that's led to his form and shot being a little bit more consistent. But the shot selection is going to have to improve a lot. And while he's, I think instinctually he's a good dribble. He does a really nice job in transition, navigating traffic. His dribble is kind of high, and it's a similar problem with Kurik's, where he's really going to have to tighten that up. And it's a tough thing to do at that height. Like even someone like Kevin Durant, like I've always thought like defenders should be a little bit more aggressive, like hounding his dribble. We saw James Harden like pick his pocket a few times in the playoffs. And I think, especially with these two not having an iota of the respect Kevin Durant has at this point in the league, that's going to be a big issue for them coming in. And they're going to really have to work hard to not just get attacked if they take the ball off the dribble.
Yeah, I don't actually see Hezonja in Musa at all, because he's not that good of an athlete. But I think he's a much more polished scorer. I actually see Tobias Harris. And just because I think that Tobias obviously has a much better frame. But in terms of being able to hit threes, get to the basket, be a solid scorer in isolation, also like not great handle and questions about ability to pass as the lead option. Do you see any Tobias in him at all?
I get it a little. I think like in terms of their offensive game, I don't know if Musa has necessarily developed a mid-range game similar to Harris yet. And I think Harris has, at least at this point, a much better jumper. And I know Musa projects as someone who could potentially be close to an elite shooter in the NBA. But Harris, to me, just says, like, I just love his form, and he's one of the pure jumpers in the league. And with Musa, I don't really see that. Actually, just in terms of jump shooting, I see a little bit more of Harris in Couric's, but I guess in terms of their mentality on offense, I see some similarities. So I get where you're coming from, and obviously they'll fill kind of similar roles.
Yeah, if we're getting into Couric's, I actually see Chandler Parsons for him, and if he has a career Chandler, that would be great. I don't know if he's as big of a partier as Chandler is, because that's tough to live up to. But in terms of inconsistent three-point shooter, but has nice form, even though Parsons' form is a little bit mechanical. But I think when you're watching Couric's play, smart player, good passer, not like a great athlete, but good enough, I think. And just a cerebral player, very good off the ball and cutting to the basket. He can finish in transition. I don't think he's the athlete that Chandler is, but I think I see some sort of similarities there in terms of really not taking anything away on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and he's a guy who hasn't had nearly the production that Musa has yet. Obviously, you mentioned it earlier, he was stuck on Barcelona's B team for most of this year. He was limited to 26 games this past season due to a knee issue, and he averaged just 7 points, two rebounds in about 15 minutes a game. Didn't shoot the ball exceptionally well, but watching him work out actually got me really excited about Couric's. And Josh, you and I were saying this pre-show, but he was a guy who was often projected to the Nets in mock drafts all the way back to last season as maybe their first round pick. So it's kind of fascinating that after all this time, he did end up on the team. But yeah, just watching his Draft Express video, I kind of fell in love with his jumper, even though against no one or against no defenders, he was kind of inconsistent shooting the ball. His shot is so effortless. It's really just a flick of the wrist. And after watching Musa, who maybe I'm overrating it, but it just feels to me like he puts like his whole body into every shot. Like Couric's just looks so smooth and look like someone like I could see turning into a really, really strong shooter with that type of form. And it was interesting in the interview I watched with him, and this was last year, so maybe he's improved on some of these qualities, but I kind of appreciated that in direct opposition to someone like Michael Porter Jr., he was very acutely aware of what his shortcomings were and where he had to improve. Like he knew his passing, ball handling, defense were going to be the big questions. And then as kind of a microscopic skill, he knew his balance on his jumpers and his consistent stability. And that was, I thought that was cool because that was something just watching him for a few minutes. I noticed that immediately that when he had his legs under him, his jumper looked incredibly pure. And then when he didn't, that's when he'd go short or long. So I just kind of like the self-awareness and basketball intelligence. I know you mentioned Chandler Parsons. He said he often gets compared by scouts that he talks to a Gordon Hayward type. And I don't think he's at the skill level of either of those guys yet. But I think in terms of his shot mechanics and his size, if he reached his absolute apex, like there are definitely elements of those guys' games he could take. And that gets me really excited. Just in terms of a blank slate, I kind of like him more than I do Musa.
Yeah, I think he has better natural athleticism. I think he's a good pick, and obviously it's so hard to judge someone in EuroLeague who's not getting a lot of playing time, but he definitely has the talent. I think John and Musa mentioned that when Couric's team, the under 17 Latvian team, played the under 17 Bosnian team, Couric's went off for 20-30 points, and he's just a stud. I mean, I think that if he gets the playing time, he'll surprise some people. And obviously things are probably not going to work out, because if you're guaranteeing a second round pick success, probably shouldn't be doing that. But I think just the caliber, and he just didn't get a chance to shine in Barcelona just because their coach was going in a different way. He wanted to really showcase and develop players that kind of were going to be sticking around for the long haul. And guys like Couric's and Alexander Vasenkov, who obviously Nets fans know well as their stash last year, weren't able to play as much. But I think that he's a good basketball IQ. He's been on the radar for a while. Another guy that Kenny Atkinson can work on and develop. And if his shot becomes more consistent, because I think he's only shot 31.5% career from three in all international competition. If that can be ironed out, because he does have good form, as you mentioned, then he could be a dangerous player that could add some value and become a role player down the line.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. I think he's a lot more projectable than Moose is. Moose, there's a lot more variance.
Moose is unique. Moose is definitely unique.
Yeah, no, and he's a chance to, again, like if he can get that shot right, like he could be, I really do think he could end up being a really deadly offensive player. And because he's just shown time and time again, and I think you made a very astute point early in the podcast that a lot of fans, and I again, I have to put myself into this category, don't value European guys as much just because they didn't get to watch them on national TV the whole year. But the type of numbers that Musa put up against competition that was better than anyone at the NCAA level played against is really, really encouraging. And to some degree, like despite like what my eyes and gut tell me he's going to be a bust, but those numbers suggest that Sean Marks really got a steal. And I'm going to use that to transition into kind of a bigger picture question for you, Josh, as we, or just kind of amusing, as we wrap this one up. I wonder if, like, do you think anyone's ever tracked, like, if teams get more value from selecting European or American players? Because while I was studying these two guys, I was thinking about this a lot, because that xenophobic attitude is obviously somewhat dissipated from the NBA as teams continue to get smarter and more well-researched and increase their staffing of European scouts and the number of times even their GMs go out and watch guys in Europe. But I really do believe, like, that stereotype still exists throughout the NBA, and I think a lot of times it leads to Euro guys going much later in the draft than they should. Like, I think of like both Bogdanoviches, who turned into really good NBA role players, and you look at like the dozens and dozens of Americans in that range that turned to nothing. And obviously that's kind of a micro example, but I wonder if you did like a big picture study over the last 5-10 years, if you'd find teams got better value on average from where they drafted European guys relative to where they drafted American guys.
Yeah, no, even a guy like Jokic, I mean, he wasn't taken until the second round, and he's become probably a top 30 player in the league. So I think that it ebbs and flows, and I would say European players are definitely a lot less valuable on average. Kind of the 10 years ago when that was the craze to take international guys, and we were ending up with people like Nicholas Tishvili and some of those other scrubs. And I think after that, there was a backlash against European players. So it kind of led to European players actually being undervalued, as kind of there was that backlash. And now I think we've gotten to the point where it's starting to be fair. Scouting has become so good. Every team has a scout dedicated to Europe who's there tracking all the games. GMs, assistant GMs are more willing to make the trip out there. I know Trajan Langdon, who where do you go? The Pistons? But he was one of the main guys on the Nets, assistant GM to Sean Marks. He was making trips out to Europe. Sean Marks was, and then guys like Givney, who's in Europe for like a month or two out of the year, just doing scouting. There's so much more information on these guys, and even stats available to us on things like Basketball Reference. I think it's starting to the point where it's evening out. But at the same time, there's so much more of a sample size for American players being drafted that there still could be a lot of variance kind of in the success rates of European players. And it's also about the environment you put them in.
Yeah. No, and that's 100% true. And it does seem like occasionally, like, Euro guys, like, if they're not good immediately, they don't, or at least from a fan perspective, they get trashed to the point that they're forgotten. Like, Mario Hezonja, a guy we've talked about a few times, he's turned himself into a pretty nice player, like, not someone who's...
He's a scrub still.
I don't know.
He's like a nice man.
I thought he was okay this year. I mean, I don't know. He obviously had a lot of opportunity in Orlando. My point is, like, he wasn't, like, an Anthony Bennett-level bust. Like, he's going to be a guy who, like, theoretically, like, could be in the league at least, like, a couple more years than someone who was just totally, like, trashed and forgotten about. So, anyways, yeah, I don't want to go too much further down that rabbit hole. I know I said we were finishing up, but I wanted to quickly mention the Nets solidifying their summer league roster on top of their draft picks, and I presume someone like Jared Allen is going to be playing again. They added
Texas. Now he's playing also.
Who is?
Harris.
Oh, okay, cool. He's gonna dominate. Texas A&M big man Tyler Davis, who is a very nice college player. I don't really see him as an NBA guy. He's going to be on the team. USC guard Jordan McLaughlin, who I think could eventually turn himself into a good backup point guard in the league. Like, he's really, really skilled and really, really smart. North Carolina wing Theo Pinson, who is not an NBA level offensive player, but defensively and athletically, if the Nets player development program is really all it's cracked up to be, someone who could maybe be promising down the road if they can get him to commit to their G League team. And then George Washington wing Yatu Wanatabi, who I'd be lying to you if I told you I knew anything about Yatu. They also have Sean.
Utah.
Oh, one more time.
Utah Watanabe.
Oh, sure. Okay. And then they have Sean Dawson from Israel, who I also know nothing a bout. Pinson, actually, to that point, he apparently already agreed on a two-way contract with Brooklyn this year, so that's semi-interesting.
I think that kind of touching on those guys a little bit, McLaughlin could develop into that TJ McConnell type, obviously kind of four-year point guards, played at Pac-12 schools. He's a good defender, he's scrappy, good passer also, average 8 assists a year.
Good shooter, too.
Yeah, decent shooter. And then Pinson, yeah, I mean, the guy is just as capable of shooting an air ball every time he takes a three or hitting the side of the backboard. I mean, his shot's a complete mess. He shot 22% on threes this past year. He's a good free throw shooter, actually, which is surprising. 82% on free throws. I mean, he does everything else. He's an excellent passer, really good defender, strong, athletic, okay finisher. He misses some easy ones. But yeah, it's going to be the shot, because if he can't figure out how to even be at least a threat from 16, 18 feet, he's not even going to be worth playing. But worth taking a chance on and seeing if he could develop even a little bit of range, because Roy Williams was not able to help him in 4 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, he was so frustrating, because he was someone who was billed as like a star coming out of high school, and like some, like a guy like a lot of people thought, like, oh, he'll be there 1-2 years and then he'll be off to the league. And he just, I'm shocked he never really developed more offensively, but you're right. I think
there's always injured, that's the problem also.
Yeah. I was just gonna say, I think the building blocks are there for a nice NBA player. Like, it wouldn't shock me if he was like he was part of the Nets rotation 2 years down the road.
Would he be like a Trevor Ariza type?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I don't know if he ever develops that jumper, but just someone who could be like a really like nice defender / athlete off the bench, like kind of like a poor man. Yeah, Marcus Smart, Tony Allen, whoever. Yeah, Marcus Smart's actually a great example with his passing ability. So that's something to look forward to with Pinson. As far as Musa, and I believe this was referring to Kurix too, Sean Marks was kind of non-committal on whether they'd play summer league, because it's similar to Doncic, where both of them between Euros and playing a full season, like they...
Well, Kurix should be well rested. The guy didn't get to play at all.
Yeah, so I guess Kurix will probably play. So maybe this might have just been Musa, but he basically said for Musa, like he's had an insane workload, so we'll see if he ends up playing summer league. Kurix, you make a valid point. And I guess that quote was probably just towards Musa. He's most likely going to play in summer league. All right, I think that just about does it for this edition of Locked On Nets. We went a little bit long, but I'm glad we could give you guys the full breakdown on these picks. We'll be back. We still got to review Jared Allen's season, but maybe we'll save that for a little later, because all of a sudden it is June 23rd and free agency is a little over a week away. So for now, I'm Gavin Shaw for Josh Bass. Thanks for tuning in. Hope you guys have a great weekend.